What's up, guys? This is Mike Cashew, and you're listening to the Brute Strength Podcast. This week, I interviewed founder of Spartan Race, Joe DeSena. Joe has also authored two best-selling books, Spartan Up and Spartan Fit, that just came out a week ago. The topic of conversation revolves around creating or getting involved in experiences that push you so far outside of your comfort zone that they transform your life, such as a Spartan race, death race, etc. Before we get started, if you're interested in all the free content that we're giving out, podcasts, blog articles, videos, free programs, etc., go to brutestrengthtraining.com, sign up for the newsletter. Hope you enjoy the show. All right, what's up, everyone? I'm here with Joe DeSena, CEO of the Spartan Race, multiple-time author, best-selling author. Joe, thanks for taking time out of your extremely busy schedule to chat with me today, man.
No problem. I just was mountain biking, and I knew I had to be on here with you, and I'm psyched that somebody wants to talk to me.
I appreciate it, man. So I want to start off... As I told you before, when I was doing my research of you, I heard about you only from, you know, seeing ads about the Spartan race and some very brief things about that. But as I was listening to some podcasts that you've done or been on, I realized very quickly that you are a phenomenal storyteller. And so I wanted to start it off with one that I heard you tell on another podcast called The Alaska Story. Can you tell us about that story?
Yeah, actually, it's fitting because you're a hunter yourself, right?
That's it.
Yeah. So basically, my team and I we had a team of four that was racing all over the world, and we had a little mantra we went by: if you're not hungry, you're eating too much. If you're not tired, you're sleeping too much. And if you're not cold, you're wearing too much. And I've actually been putting that on shirts. And and so we were out there. We were cold, tired, and hungry. And I think we were out there just about 10 days. It was 30 below, waist-deep snow. And we were pushing through basically on the Iditarod Trail without the dogs. And I don't know what day it was. We were completely delirious. And we stumbled upon a house, and we hadn't seen a house for days, so we weren't sure if we were really seeing it or not. And the reason I say that is we had seen bear that weren't actually bear; they were trees. We were hallucinating pretty horrifically, and so we really weren't sure if this was a house. Anyway, it turned out to be a house. And you by the way, you'd even smell things that didn't exist.
Wow,
that's how bad the hallucinations were, and so. We knock on the door, and this this guy comes out, perfect, you know, American. Him and his wife, two kids, live there. I don't even know what time it is because we're not keeping track of time, but the sun's not out. And he lets us in, and we explain what we're doing, and he agrees to feed us, which was awesome. We got no food. We're out there freezing, and none of us want to leave, but we know we're imposing on him. But we start asking him questions, and it turns out he was in the Marines, and when he got out, he just packed it in. I mean, it had to be 150 miles in from anywhere, and in the middle of nowhere, no stores, nothing. And he basically said he'd go out and hunt and find his food and drag it back. And sometimes, you know, he'd drag stuff back 10, 15 miles because he had to feed the family. So, you know, you and I and the listeners could talk about hunting and being rugged. This guy was doing it.
That's badass.
That was pretty badass. I mean, obviously, there's even another level where you're not living in a house.
Right.
But he was, he was pretty badass.
Why do you think somebody does something like that when they've been in, you know, the States and they could have all of the comfort? Why would someone choose to do that, in your opinion?
I think about it all the time. You probably think we all think about it. It's those that actually do it, right? There's something really primal and exciting about this idea of living without all these niceties that we have at our fingertips, and you just don't feel alive when you're able to access food on demand, TV on demand, sex on demand. Everything is like right at your fingertips. But the way we lived for the last, million years on this planet, you'd go days without food. You certainly couldn't go stop and see a movie, right? You couldn't, like, so there's something very primal and really makes you feel alive about going out and kind of, you know, living and dying by that sword. Can you survive? And so we do it in little ways, whether it's a Spartan race, or I just went mountain biking, or you go out with your bow and arrow, mm-hmm. right? Go hunting. But the problem is we're not even doing it in a real fashion, right? Like you and I spoke for a few minutes before the podcast, and hunting on your front lawn is not really hunting, right?
Right.
And going out and having all the latest equipment and a four-wheeler and a cabin, just like, that's not really it. And so I don't know. I think the guys like that that do it, first of all, we're all impressed with stories like that and the people that actually do it. And second of all, I think deep down inside, we all wish we could do it.
Right.
My wife would never go for it, but man, like, we live in the country now. We live in Vermont. There's 400 people in town. But it's not really the country. I mean, 30 minutes, I could be anywhere, like airports, right? Like, if I had my way, we'd go deep in like that guy went in. And then you find out who you are. Mm-hmm.
Right. There definitely seems to be that kind of challenge aspect to it. Especially men want to conquer things and see how far they can take things. But it also seems like it's the easiest way to remain present and probably have this very deep sense of purpose and happiness, right? When you strip away all of the gadgets, electronics, distractions, like you said, like, you really get to know yourself and you're one with the important things, whatever those are.
Yeah, I think if you look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's really refreshing to get to a place where you just want, like, water, food, shelter, right? When you get to a place, like, don't forget, you don't own things, and I own a lot of stuff, and you own a lot of stuff, and the listeners own a lot, but you don't really own things. You can't take it with you. None of us are making that alive, mm-hmm. and the stuff really owns you, because it requires, like, everything's in a state of disrepair. It requires maintenance. People steal it. You got to put it away. You got no room for, like, so when you get to that place we're talking about, where you don't have anything to worry about but survival, I don't know, in some ways, in many ways, very refreshing. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a scary step. Like, I've Adi, my girlfriend, and I have talked about moving to a couple different countries overseas and stuff like that, and getting off the grid a little bit. And it's a scary step to be away from all the things, you know, the business, all of that kind of stuff. So it's admirable to hear stories like you just told.
You got to do it. I don't know if you know it, but I just spent the last year in Singapore.
No,
we moved. Yeah, we moved to Asia. I moved my family. We left the farm, which the farm is awesome. I'm mm-hmm. sitting here now. And I just wanted to experience Asia. It was good for Spartan Race. We needed to be over there to get things going, mm-hmm. which we did. And while I was over there for the winter, we went to Japan. We went skiing in Japan, and I'm dying to meet the marathon monks. A New York Times writer named this group, of the sect of monks in Kyoto, the marathon monks. That's not their Japanese name. And I was just dying to meet them. And if you don't know their story, I'm sure the listeners don't know the story, most of them. I'll tell it to you because it's fascinating.
Please.
Basically, 800 or so years ago in China, I don't know where in China, but they moved a bunch of buildings over to Japan, to Kyoto. So in China, most of the culture and heritage, that old stuff is gone. You go there and it's just, you know, bustling industrialism. Now it's even coming up to our level, right? All these high-rise buildings and all that old stuff is gone. But in Kyoto, this stuff remains, and it looks like you're watching, you know, The Last Samurai. Mm-hmm. Stuff is really old-fashioned. The geisha women dressed. And if you go up into the mountains, you find the oldest buildings around. And there's these monks that pray up there, and they have this ritual where they have about a 26-mile dirt single track course that's not easy to follow because there's all kinds of intersections and things. And they put on their wooden sandals and they wear their robes. And every single day, with some breaks in between throughout the year, they do a full marathon. And they pray along the way. Wow. And so if you and I decided, like you said, you wanted to move, this would be incredible for you. You want to get out of your comfort zone.
Right.
You basically knock on their door and you're like, all right, I'm here. You know, I want to spend a year here. I want to become a monk. They say, great. They say, go do 100 days straight of marathons. Here's your wooden sandals and your robe. Check in each day. Do your prayers. So you got to go do 100 days in a row of marathons, right?
Wow.
Not fast, just praying along, right? So that's even more frustrating. So you get done with the 100 days and they say, hey, great job, Michael. They pat you on the back and they say, all right, here's the deal. Take this sword. You've got 800 more days to go, but if you decide to quit along the way, you got to kill yourself.
Wow.
So talk about commitment. So I had to go. I had to see these guys, and we stumbled upon the trail. I brought my whole family there. And along the way, what do you think you see? You see little tombstones, tiny little tombstones. These are the guys that killed themselves that didn't make the cutoff. They didn't make the 900 days. And then you stumble upon a cemetery where there's a huge celebration, giant stone tombstones with all kinds of words carved in, you know, says number 55 or number 12. And those are the guys that finished the 900 total days. And so I'm hiking on this thing with my kids and I'm like, you see, this guy's a quitter. This guy's a quitter. He killed himself right here. Couldn't do it. There's one guy that did it twice. That came out of World War II and just felt like he needed to cleanse his soul, and he did 1,800 days.
That's crazy.
It's crazy, right? But what it does is it says to you, is there really anything that I could complain about that's worthy of complaining? Like, you know what I mean? You're not doing 1,800 days on a trail, wooden sandals, 26 miles a day. Like, is it really that bad? Because not, you know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. So,
Next time one of your listeners is in the gym and they're saying, oh, this is ridiculous, this workout, strap on the wooden sandals. Let me know how it feels in 500.
Right. Yeah, we're definitely going to dive more into that kind of stuff in a little bit.
I apologize.
That's phenomenal. I love that story. Thank you.
Yeah.
So
because of, I'm moving to Japan.
No shit.
Yeah, so we're picking up and You triggered this thought, which is it's hard to pick up and move. And so, you know, our oldest is 10 years old. We've got an opportunity to grow Spartan in Asia. And I'm like, you know what? Let's just do it. Mm-hmm. When are we going to talk about it the rest of our lives? Let's just do it.
That is awesome.
My wife is cool. And we're doing it. We'll be in Tokyo in 12 days.
Congratulations, man. That is so cool.
Yeah.
I love that. So let's back up a little bit. I can't remember exactly where I was reading, but I've heard you say that you started many businesses and ranging back from, say, 13 years old. And it sounds like a lot of them were very successful, even when you were very young. And so, you know, you had this get it done entrepreneurial attitude from a very young age. Where did you get that from?
Well, I haven't been like unicorn successful. I've never sold a $1 billion business, which you see so much right now in Silicon Valley, for example. So, you know, hats off to those guys. If you measure yourself with money, they've crushed it. I've been more of a blue collar, sweaty kind of worker, entrepreneur, not a tech guy. Mm-hmm. And I did start at a young age. And I got it, I think about it a lot because I have children now and I want to instill those same values. I got it from, one, my dad. My dad was a workaholic. And then, two, the neighborhood. The neighborhood we were in was all organized crime. Everybody was hustling. You either owned a ravioli store, a pizza shop, a cement company, a bricklayer, or you were killing people and going to jail. So, it was a very, they worshiped money in the neighborhood, right? So as a young person, you're enamored with Cadillacs, and everybody's either talking about food or money. And so you gotta, you know, it sounds superficial and against everything we're talking about here, but if you want to instill that drive in a kid, he's got to really respect money, he or she, and go after it. Or you're doing it just to change the world and you don't care about money, or you're doing it for a little bit of both, I guess. And I got lucky because my mother was into health food, meditation, yoga. She was vegan, right? She was introducing all this stuff at a young age. So I was able to marry that drive and passion towards getting ahead and making money and building a business, building something with health and wellness eventually. Wow. So.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, nowadays your company creates an enormous amount of value for people, transformative experiences, things that they literally, a lot of these people, they don't have any other place to go for what you're giving them, right? You transform their life, give them gratitude, humility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Was that a part of your thought process back in the day at all? Were you just trying to make a buck?
Well, I was trying to, from the time pre-13, I was trying to make a buck. I was very focused on making money. When I got to Vermont in 2002 or 2003, so you're talking about 13 years ago, so I was like 35 years old, I was technically retiring. I was done. I did my job in my mind. I made enough money to have some money in the bank, and now I was going to focus on family, myself, my, you know, growing a family. Which we did, and we got a farm, and things were going well. And I really stumbled upon, it was a hobby for me, putting on races and helping people transform their life, pushing harder than they ever pushed, much like you do with people or anybody in the fitness community does.
Right, and these were the death races back in the day, right?
Oh, even before,
okay.
Even before death race, I was always putting on some kind of race. It was a hobby, it was a money-losing business, but for me, it was kind of like what my mother did when she got people into yoga or meditation or dance or whatever it was. She would just get people out of their comfort zone. And so it was fun for me, but it was not a business because mm-hmm. it couldn't make any money. And then in 2010, 6 years ago, I decided to go after it like a business. And for me, I guess when I look back, what the core motivation was, it wasn't about money. It was about could I transform lives on a mass scale? And the reason, as I talk to you and think about it, the reason I know it wasn't about, I didn't really want to invest much. I figured I'd invest 50 or 100 grand. I know that's a lot of money to people listening, but it turned out to be much, much bigger investment than that. It took up 90% of my life savings to get this thing going. But I was going to invest that, and really, for me, it was, all right, could we transform lives on a mass scale? And so we did, right? We're touching a million people a year now doing these races somewhere in the world. But it absorbs so much of my savings that it's put a lot of stress on me, right? It was not part of the plan. And so if you ask me today, what's the goal? Well, one, I'd like to at least get my money back. It would be nice because I want, you know, I want to breathe a little easier.
That would be nice.
That'd be nice. But two is, man, the reward. If you told me we would always have a roof over our head and we had everything covered, the reward that I get on a daily basis from the emails and people coming up and saying, "Hey, you changed my life," that's really enough payment.
Right.
It's really enough. So, but to go to your question, I didn't know going in that's. Like people would say, "Hey Joe, thanks for getting me into mountain biking. Thanks for getting me into mountain climbing," whatever it was. But it wasn't like this. This is like, I stopped smoking. I stopped drinking. Mm-hmm. I'm back with my wife. I lost 200 pounds every single day. You know, I landed in Singapore, my family last year. I was there 1 hour and a waiter came up to me. We were sitting down having lunch. A waiter came up to me and said, "Joe Desen." I said, "Yeah." He said, "I read your book. I finished the book. I stopped smoking. I haven't had a cigarette since." It's unbelievable.
That is unbelievable. Incredible.
So, you know, hard to look back and have 20/20 vision and know exactly what was going through my mind, but I wanted to change lives on a mass scale, and it wasn't about the money, but it was about the money for all my businesses before Spartan.
Right. So you like to say things like, your goal is to bring people to the edge of death. And that's different for every different person, right? Depending on what their physical capabilities are. Can you tell us about a time or two where you were on the edge of death and where that kind of desire thought came from? And you kind of just told us one about the Alaska story, but any other stories like that?
Yeah, I mean, I was in a bad car accident. A friend of mine was driving me in 2004, right at the height of all my crazy races. So I was in the best shape of my life, and he fell asleep. And we hit a tree at 85 miles an hour, and I went out the side window, and my leg was ripped out of my hip. And when I woke up in the grassy area between both sides of the highway, I couldn't move. I was in enormous pain. It was a disaster, as you could imagine. Lucky to be alive. Mm-hmm. So that is a wake-up call. But I was in many races where the races I would do were self-supported, and you'd be out there. And I remember once in Switzerland just laying down in the snow and telling my team, go, I'm done. Like not done like I'm done with the race, like done, I'm done with life.
Right.
And so again, it's a very interesting place to get to. And I experienced it for myself. It's kind of like, if I had to come up with an analogy, it's like you got this Ferrari in your garage, let's say, and you never drive it because you want to keep it really pristine and clean. You wax it every day and it just sits there. You don't really know it that well, but when you drive it at full, and I've never driven a Ferrari, I'm just using it as an example, you drive it at full speed around the track, I would imagine you get to know the car. And so the car being like our body, you know it because you were in the CrossFit game. When you take yourself to that place, mm-hmm. you really get to know yourself, right?
Absolutely.
And it's transformative. And so, when you know, going back to why would I want to do that to people, it's not because I'm just a crazy person. It's because that's where the transformation happens, mm-hmm. right? That's why all these cultures would have these kinds of events that take people through something that's transformative. We don't do that anymore in the U.S. If I had my way, you know, 18-year-olds would all have to sign up for the military or sign up for, you know, a death race or an agogi or something, right? Because my kids, by the way, my 10-year-old and my 8-year-old boy, or I had to think for a second how old he was, are out in the woods right now for 3-day survival training.
Wow.
So, you know, I mean, it's not like they're out there eating deer meat raw with their mouth.
Right.
But you got to do this stuff.
So I learned what you're talking about kind of indirectly through like a drug rehab experience, where mine was, rather than an event, it was more of a rock bottom experience. But everything you're talking about is what I experienced through recovery, right? I got all of that humility. I got to know myself at a very, very basic level. And if you can learn to be with yourself, love yourself, etc., on that level, then everything else has the volume turned down. You can deal with life a lot better. And so it sounds like that's exactly what you're talking about, right?
I think that's a great way to describe it. I agree with that. I think that's great. The volume gets turned down everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. So how far do you recommend people really take this? I mean, you have your Spartan races. I think the death race is still in existence, right?
Yeah, we're doing a gogi now.
Okay.
Agogi was the but I kept death race. The agogi was what the term used when children were training for a decade as Spartan children, right? So they'd enter this thing at like 7 years old, and it was just brutal training, as if they were training for, you know, 10x the CrossFit Games,
right?
And so I said, really, what we should do, if this whole thing is about transformation and we want to get people healthy mentally and physically, It's got to be less about just breaking people for the sake of breaking them and having, you know, one man or one woman standing. And it's got to be more about getting the whole group through the thing.
Right.
And so we created a gogi, and a gogi is a little more of that. Still brutal, you know, still has death race elements to it, but it's a little more teaching, especially when your mind is open to it, when you're completely broken and can't take another step. Mm-hmm. So, and we've had a lot of success with it. And so a gogi is where I want to get people to. And we created something called a Delta, and the Delta is this, this triangle, this metal triangle that gets filled with your achievements. So like you said, you did one of our training things, you would get, complete your level one certification, whatever it is. And you'd be able to, insert that coin or that medal into the Delta. You'd finish your trifecta, do our three races. You'd be able to insert that into the Delta. And the reason we did it, it's not because a medal or a trophy matters. It's just that, people need reasons to do this stuff, right, like you said earlier. And so whether we like it or not, I'm active enough on our social media page to see what motivates people. And being able to show off the bling, whether it's in the Olympics with a gold medal or silver, mm-hmm, or bronze or the Delta or whatever it is, really helps people get out of bed in the morning.
Right. I love that.
So I don't know if that answered the question, but...
No, absolutely. And do you think it is, or do you advocate people, you know, some people may be training for a, what's your sprint, your Spartan race sprint, and that might be a complete crucible experience for that person, right? They get off the couch, they train for, and they complete the sprint. Do you advocate people continue trying to do harder and harder and longer crucibles to continue expanding their mind, their threshold, et cetera?
Well, I can't say that because you also don't want a complete addiction.
Right.
Addiction in general is no good, right? So you don't want, I was definitely addicted to this. I went around the world training like crazy, and ultimately we're just training for life. And so what I'm suggesting is make it a part of your life so that it happens over and over and over, and it becomes a habit. Unfortunately for us as human beings, we need an event to drive the training. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to be a Spartan race you sign up for. It could be a marathon. It could be anything. But you got to sign. You got to put stuff on the calendar, and that's going to force you to stay true to that training regimen and that eating, you know, regimen, and going to bed early and not going, right? Because you look at teenagers that are on the on a good track. It's because they're playing a sport. Mm-hmm. And if you're not playing a sport, you get in trouble. So would I love everybody to come out and do 72 hours of course, and eventually climb Mount Everest? Yeah, it'd be great. But it's not for everybody. And look, like you said, for the masses of people, the sprint distance is like climbing Mount Everest.
Right.
And so as long as you're getting out there and you're transforming yourself and pushing your limits, you don't even have to sign up for a race. Go sign up for anything. Just get out off the couch.
Right. And hopefully you are using those lessons that you learned through that experience in your actual life, right? That's where the real magic happens, not just in the, you know, 2 to 72 hours that you're going through it, but what happens after that.
No, listen, we're all going to face obstacles in life, and it's not how big of an obstacle we face that makes us better or worse than another person. It's how you react to the obstacle. And so all we're trying to teach is how to react to obstacles that we all are going to face. Mm-hmm. Somebody gets sick, somebody gets cancer, somebody gets divorced. Think about all the people around you. Everybody, you get an email every day, somebody's got a problem, right? So we're just trying to teach people we're giving them the tools to better deal with life. Mm-hmm.
So kind of going along with that line of thought, I'm sure you've experienced people having these life-changing experiences through your races, and they all of a sudden have all of this newfound wisdom and perception. But I'm sure a lot of people start to forget that and they start taking things for granted again and they lose those lessons. Is there any way that you can recommend, anything you can recommend to help people use what they've learned and practice what they've learned through those experiences?
Yeah, so we created, it's going to sound self-serving, but we created something called Spartan X.
Okay.
And it's basically an online, what happened was people were buying our first book, Spartan Up, which lays out this mindset we just talked about and you're asking about. And people were carrying the book with them and doing the races and underlining and making notes. So we said, all right, we got to create an online course for this mindset. And so that's Spartan X. Mm-hmm. And that's one way for people that are having a tough time staying true to the, you know, this philosophy. But another way is you got to just surround yourself with motivated people. This morning, I had to get up at 4:15 a.m. My friend said, hey, let's go. We're going to go out and hike the mountain. I don't really want to get up at 4:15 a.m. I'm sure you don't want to get up at 4:15 a.m. But because we made a commitment to each other last night, right, that we're meeting, right, then he didn't want to go do it either. Mm-hmm. But he made a commitment to me. I made a commitment to him. And so one way to stay on track and make sure you're remaining true to this philosophy is surround yourself with people that are – we are an average of our five best friends. Mm-hmm. Choose five friends that are pulling you up in life and not down.
What is your advice for people that say have, you know, three of those five people that they hang out with most are really bringing them down, but they've known them for a long time. Maybe they're family. Maybe they're just really close friends that they grew up with. How do they approach, I don't know, changing that relationship? I'm not sure I would say end it, but how do they approach changing those relationships so that they're, you know, protecting themselves and surrounding themselves with people that make them greater?
Well, I think what you got to do, it's going to sound somewhat selfish, is you got to do the healthy things. And if those people are unhealthy and guiding you in the wrong direction, when you're doing those things, they're not going to come along. And so before you know it, you're around people that are doing those things and they're kind of fading away. Mm-hmm. You know, unless you're a social worker or like, you got to spend time around people that are motivated and uplifting and doing healthy, good things. Because, otherwise you got to be extremely strong to be around people that are pulling you down so that you don't go in that direction.
Right. At the end of the day, we are evolved monkeys that are just going to do what people around us do for the most part, right? Unless we're the most disciplined person in our state.
That's right.
Right. What other types of things can people do outside of these physical crucibles to foster this Spartan mindset? Like you mentioned meditation, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, my mother, as I said, in the 70s was pushing meditation. But it's somewhat of a crucible too, right? To sit there in stillness and just focus is a very hard thing for myself or you or anybody to do. So, you know, Bikram yoga. Try doing some Bikram yoga classes. A lot of guys will say to you, I don't need to do yoga. It's not that hard or it's not really a workout. Try a Bikram class and then let me know how you feel. Mm-hmm. Right? So it doesn't have to be getting out under barbed wire or necessarily going to a traditional gym. It's really just doing something you're not 100% comfortable doing. Unless you're completely happy with your life right now, which most people want to make a change. They want to make more money. They want to find a different mate, whatever it is. Unless you're completely healthy and happy the way you are, you probably are doing things in a certain way that are producing those results. So unless you change the way you live, the people you hang out with, the things you do, you're going to remain exactly the way you are today.
Right. What's your relationship with failure? You talk a lot about failure. So what's your relationship with it? And such as what is your initial thought when you have a failure of any size? And how do you feel about that?
I don't like to fail, but I've learned to accept it. It's a growing process, but I'm happy that I don't like to fail because it drives me to twist and turn and find another way to avoid failure. And so if you are completely okay with failing, you might not have that tenacity, right, that resilience necessary to get to the finish line. For example, Thomas Edison, right, 900 plus light bulbs that didn't work until he got one that did. But if you were okay with failure, you just give up, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so you can't let it break you. I failed plenty of times. You probably fail. We all fail. Absolutely. And so accept it and learn from it and move forward. I'm just moving forward every day. I don't want to go backwards.
Right. How would you describe your style of leadership and maybe your philosophy on leadership?
Well, you don't want to ask people to do things you won't do yourself. You got to live whatever you're asking them to do. You've got to live it. You got to get in there shoulder to shoulder with them. You got to eat last. They got to eat before you. And I don't know. I like to find people not necessarily with domain expertise. In other words, they don't have to be the best finance person. They don't have to be the best excavator. Or, you know, go through the laundry list of professions. What they do have to have is passion and energy and just a love for life. Mm-hmm. If they've got that, you could teach them anything. And by the way, it's easy to lead people that are full of energy and life.
Right.
Those people are easy to lead.
Right. So basically, it's more about finding the right people for the team and letting them do their own thing.
Yeah. Like, as long as you're guiding them. And you know, I'm not a big believer. This is going to sound ridiculous, but it's factual. I'm not a big believer in you know, constantly patting people on the back and making sure you're there for their birthday and all this. It's been proven that you know, rewards, but random rewards, not necessarily on cue all the time, are the best motivator.
Right.
You get the best results, right? And so you want to pat people on the back. You want to tell them good job, but we're never stopping. So it's not like, hey, good job, we're done now. It's like when you first go to the gym, you realize, oh, my God, this is something I have to do the rest of my life. It's not like you get some physique and all of a sudden you could stop.
Right.
Right? It's a constant work.
Right.
Just like life. So pat on the back, move forward.
Love that. Why do you feel the need to take on, say, challenging the human culture to be more Spartan-like? What do you think about you? What unique about you makes you want to do this?
I don't know. I mean, I everybody has their thing when they wake up in the morning. Why are they getting out of bed? And that's my thing. I told you I was out early this morning. I was calling people trying to wake them up. They probably weren't happy with me, but I don't know. I get a real kick out of just getting people moving. It's just something that drives me. Different people, you know, are driven by different things. That's my purpose in life.
I love it, man. Who have been some of your biggest inspirations growing up and throughout business and athletics, et cetera?
Well, I guess my dad first, my mom. And then I've been lucky. I've had some older folks. I always took advice from older people. I don't know why. I was always attracted. You know, years ago, you guys, people listening might not realize it, but if you were in a restaurant, the guy on the corner that was overweight, gray hair, older businessman, that was the guy everybody was trying to be. Today, it's the young tech kid, right? It's a different thing you look up to. But I always went for the gray-haired, older person, male, female, whatever, that could just give me advice and guide me, because instinctually I knew that they already did it, and I don't want to make the mistakes without knowledge that they have. So I it's like a shortcut. Mm-hmm. So there have been many, you know, I can count on a couple of hands that were kind enough. By the way, most successful older people want to help a young, aggressive person. I'm always looking for that young, aggressive person to help. The reality is, though, most of them are not that aggressive, and they're not going after it. And so I'm not interested in helping that kid. I am interested in the kid that's just an animal.
Right. You're not interested in the entitled kid, but the one that is willing to do whatever it takes to create something excellent, say.
Yeah, if you're supposed to meet me at a certain time and you don't show up, you're late, or if you're asking about vacation days, or if you're upset because somebody didn't give you a cake on your birthday, mm-hmm. No thanks, I don't have time. The guy I want to help and pass any little bit of knowledge I have, advice, like, is the guy or the girl that's just like an animal, just waking up like Uma Thurman and Kill Bill. And just look, like, get through life like on top, you know?
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah, man. Do you still ask for help?
I ask for help every day. Every day, yeah. I love learning.
Mm-hmm. What are you passionately learning about right now?
Business. I've run businesses for 30 plus years, but never a business like this, where it's you know, in 30 countries, and it's got people all over the place in all those countries, and it's requiring different leadership skills, which you and I talked about. And right. So I'm leaning on military folk. I've been lucky enough to access some really high-ranking retired military people that have been kind enough to come into the organization and give me guidance on communication and motivation and process and standard operating procedures, things that I was never taught. Mm-hmm. I've been in business since I'm a young kid, and so I didn't have any traditional training. I didn't get an MBA.
Right. Do you ever have any feelings like, I've been doing this so long, I should know all of this, or do you just kind of naturally have the humility to ask for help?
I have no issue asking for help.
Yeah.
One way to check yourself on this is, I remember reading a long time ago, I don't know if this is still a common thought, but I read a long time ago that men studied, by the way, it's probably not a common thought anymore. Let me tell you, and then I'll tell you why. Men studied years ago, before we had all these gadgets in the car that guide you to your destination, men were not willing to ask for directions. Obviously, there were some men, but in general, men were not willing to ask for directions. Women were more willing to ask for directions in the car. Today, you don't have to ask for directions, right? You've got your maps. I really took that to heart, and I thought to myself, I mean, I must have been a teenager reading it, and I thought to myself, you could bleep this out, but why the fuck would I care what somebody thought if I was asking directions? I just want to get there sooner.
Right.
Right? And so I have no issue asking for help. And anybody listening should have no issue asking for help. Matter of fact, I respect people that ask for help, and I know people I ask respect me for asking.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of a form of vulnerability, and that's what connects all of us, right? The people that act perfect are the ones that we can't really relate to.
Yeah.
I think that's you have such a unique perspective, such on opposite ends of the spectrum, right? You're this hardened Spartan on one end, and then what most people would think is a very different side of you, but really the same side is this ability to ask for help. You're talking about meditation and caring for people and stuff like that, and that's just like, it seems the way of the new man, I guess I'm saying.
But I don't know. I mean, if we studied Spartans, they had a lot of things. Like, we only know them to be the 300 soldiers, right, that stood there and held off the Persians for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. And they were hard-ass. But when you really dive in and study, like, they were into the arts. They believed in humor. They just didn't talk much, and they didn't write down much because they were like, why say anything if, like, when you do speak, it should really mean something.
Right.
And they joked, to get through ridiculous times, like hiking hundreds of miles, carrying 70 pounds of equipment to go to battle 10,000 men. So, you know, I it's been around for a while. I think it's the advancement of technology and all these niceties that we talked about earlier, right? Couches, indoor plumbing, et cetera, that give you this entitlement, and then that entitlement starts to screw up your mindset.
Right.
And so you're not humble anymore. You're not willing to ask for help. You're not caring. You don't experience. So that's my two cents. You right. Because when you go back to that place where you were in your training and where I was, where I described, you become a pretty humble. You get knocked down. It's like a wrestler. You talk to some of these top grapplers or wrestlers, Olympic level. These guys shake your hand. You're like, this guy's that tough? He's humble. He's been beaten as much as he's beaten other people.
Right. Right. All right, man. So, I have a couple more questions for you before we wrap it up. And this one, it just popped into my head as you were talking about your children, something that I've wondered about for a while. You're a wealthy man. How do you, and I know you said your kids are at a 3-day intensive training right now, but what ways do you, say, prevent them from becoming spoiled and maybe mentally weak? Or what rules do you create around how you treat them to prevent that stuff from happening?
It's the $64 million question I ask myself every day. And so I think I've never done this before. Mm-hmm. It's not like I was a dad before and I know what works and doesn't. I'm going by instinct here and what my parents did. I think you got to be hard when the choices go easy or go hard. You got to go hard. I think you got to hold them accountable. I think I'll give you an example. So we skied a lot before we moved to Asia because we're in Vermont. We're 8 miles from a ski resort. And my oldest son, who was training two-a-days for about 2 years at this point, goes into a ski group, and it's cold up here. I mean, it's hard skiing. Icy, cold, windy. And I get to the ski resort, and they said, I was going to have lunch with the kids. And they said, your son's already downstairs. And I said, how's he downstairs? I'm here 30 minutes early. They said, he was complaining. He was too cold. He wanted to come in. He was whimpering. And so now I got like 4 minutes before I see him because I'm furious. And I've got to figure out what's the proper parental mm-hmm. move here that's going to get the result you just asked me about. And I said, hey, bud, why don't we eat something? I heard you were cold. I said, here's the good news. If that team's too hard that you're on, you're now going to join my team. The good news is on my team, you don't have to worry about them and getting cold because I don't take a chairlift. I hike up the mountain with my skis, so let's go. So we ate lunch, and I made them hike.
Wow.
All the way to the top of the mountain. Now, people listening, their parents will say, this guy is a crazy. But, you know, the next day he wanted to get off my team and go back to his team and stay with his friends and didn't complain about the cold anymore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here's the thing. If you want good kids, you got to be a good parent. And that means making tough decisions that are going to be painful, that are not going to be popular, right? Mm-hmm. If you're worried about the popular decisions, we're around people, let's give him the cookie, he's complaining about, that's right. The easy thing to do, that's a disaster.
Right.
In my opinion. So I just got an email as I was talking to you from the survival coach that's out there with him, a friend of mine, and he said, your oldest son keeps dropping his water bottle. And he sent me a video of making my son walk back the 100 yards and get it for the 20th time. And I wrote back, I said, do me a favor, have him do the whole 6 miles again because he dropped it 20. Like, so that's, you don't want to be so overly difficult that the kid, you know, grows up to be a crazy person. Right. But you got to, my father was tough and it worked. My father was tough.
It's interesting too. You didn't just tell your son to walk up by himself. You walked with him. And I think that's and this is going to probably sound silly coming from me because I don't have kids, nor am I even close to having kids. But I think it's all too common nowadays to just tell your kids what to do, and you don't necessarily think or do that yourself, right?
Oh, I do it. I mean, I'll wake them up at 5:45 in the morning in their pajamas, and we'll go out and hike carrying rocks, and I'm carrying a rock with them. So everything we do, we do it. They know I do it too.
Right.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Tell me about the new book, Spartan Fit, and how is it different from Spartan Up?
So Spartan Up was more of a mental gut check, you know, get you going. This is how you need to live. The response we got from the book was fabulous, but people were saying, hey, I need an exact plan. I need a blueprint. And so Spartan Fit is a 30-day blueprint, very common sense blueprint. If you can't give me or us or yourself 30 days, I don't know what to tell you. So we gave you a 30-day plan. You follow this, you'll be mentally tougher, you'll be physically stronger, and great results so far. I think we're going to hit some bestseller lists very soon here. Wow. Knock on wood. So yeah, very well received so far.
That's awesome. What kind of results are people coming back with that you're hearing about?
We got some wonderful transformations. We sent the book around in advance of coming out last week, and I've had people lose a ton of weight, pack on a bunch of muscle, add a bunch of endurance, but more important than all that, just change their mindset.
Yeah.
You know, just tougher mindset. I mean, if I sent you the emails we get on a daily basis, you'd tear up. It's uh-huh. It's unbelievable.
That's awesome, man. Can you give me maybe a rough example of a day in one of these workouts?
Yeah, I'll give you the craziest one. Nobody will buy the book when they hear this one.
Yeah.
So fill your mouth up with water and go run 10 miles. Don't spit the water out. Don't swallow it.
I think you just sold a bunch of Spartan Fit books. I think my listeners are going to eat that shit up. I definitely do. I love it.
Try that one. Let me know how it goes.
Shit, man. What's the fastest time you've ever heard on that challenge?
I don't know, but that's. I think you and I should. We should work on clocking that. We should set. That's a great idea.
Wow. I have a couple good candidates for that.
Yeah. Let's set up a page, and we'll start ranking people on that challenge. I like
yeah.
that.
Hell yeah! Awesome.
In fact, here's what we'll do. I'll give away to your listeners a bunch of things. We'll set a date. We'll mm-hmm. say by September 1st. We'll do an honor system, mm-hmm. or maybe they got a video. I don't know. We'll come up with some way to track it, but I don't mind an honor system. And we'll give away some stuff. Let's do it.
Sounds awesome. We'll nail down the details in just a second. That is awesome, man. I can't wait to read the rest of these. Cool. Tell me or tell everybody what else is going on that you want them to know about, and then where they can find you on social media, learn more about you, etc.
Yeah. So I give everybody my email, which is probably a mistake, but it's joe@spartan.com. And I respond to all my emails. If I don't, I'm either dead or I didn't get it. And you can go to spartan.com and learn more. And that's about it. I mean, we got Facebook pages and all the social media channels that everybody else has. But the hardest thing to do for your listeners is actually sign up for something. That once you do that, that sets off a series of events that are better for you in life. So just get signed up for something.
And I can attest to that. I've done a couple of the 13 milers, and were both phenomenal experiences. I want to look more into the death races and stuff like that. I've done Seal Fit a couple times and the Kokoro camps.
If you're available, I'm going to bring you to China.
Wow.
I got an event I'm putting on in October in Agogi on the Great Wall.
Holy shit.
It's going to be an event like no other. It'll blow you away. So
wow.
If you could get there, if you could cover the flight, you'd be my guest. And you will have an absolute blast.
Wow.
You could do podcasts from there.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
From the Great Wall.
That is amazing. Yeah, I'll follow up with you in just a little bit on that as well. And like I was saying, those experiences for me have been, like you've talked about, they've been life-changing for me. They've given me more perspective, like a better perspective on life, more gratitude. I'm a better teammate. I can lead better. I can follow better. It's just helped me in more ways than I can even explain. So just to piggyback on what you're saying, sign up for one of these races, and you know, do something well outside of your comfort zone, and you will not regret it. Joe, I really appreciate the time, man. I know you're super busy, so it means a lot.
Thanks for having me.
All right, man. We'll talk soon.
All right.